Hi, and welcome to the Georgia Politics Podcast. This is Joseph Geierman of Doraville.org, and we're here today to talk from Manuel's Tavern to talk about Georgia politics. We'll go around the table, starting to my left, with all the panelists introducing themselves.
I'm Catherine Smith from Blog for Democracy and Georgia for Democracy.
Grace and Daughters, mostly media.wordpress.com.
Grift Drift from Drifting Through the Grift.
And Jen Brock.
Well, this is an exciting time in Georgia politics, mostly because the legislature is back in session. We just had a big election. Not a whole lot changed in Georgia, but there's some movement afoot, and there's some things happening in the legislature. And Grift, actually, you've been following what's been happening. They've been in session about a week now. You've been following it pretty closely. What should we be looking for this term?
Well, the big word is budget. We have about a $2 billion shortfall, and it is where are we going to make up that money? And, of course, Republicans are in charge, and they immediately come out and say, we are not going to raise taxes, although they already have. And we're not sure where the cuts are going to come. I think we're going to have a better idea next week. The legislature is actually in recess next week because they will have budget briefings the entire week. By experts and panelists and, of course, lobbyists and whoever else knows anything about the budget. So we're going to have a better idea of where the cuts are going to come next week. But with $2 billion, you're talking about $2 billion in a $20 billion budget, so you're talking about 10%. It is going to be deep, and it's going to be in areas that we normally don't see.
Well, the one shot across the board we've already heard is that they're talking about adding two children to each classroom, which is a pretty dramatic increase and something that most of the teachers I've talked to are not happy about, and neither are parents, I'm sure.
Yeah, that's actually been approved for the upcoming school year. I think the way it works is they can increase class size one time for a school year without any sort of legislative action, so two extra kids per classroom, although I haven't quite figured out how that works, that saves money. It's not like you can
fire teachers.
Cut a teacher. I guess maybe teachers' aides or resources they can duplicate or something like that.
They cut all the peripheral stuff like language in elementary school, language instruction. They'll look at stuff like that, all the things they consider extracurriculars, I suppose. One thing to add to the education mess that we're going to have with this budget cut, because this really seems to be, we're hearing the pushback, you know, so much in the education sector. Considering the economy and the loss of jobs in Georgia, people can't afford to send their kids to private schools. So not only are we going to have extra kids in the public schools, we're going to have a lot of kids who would traditionally go to private schools because nobody can afford them right now. So
and more demanding parents, too.
Very demanding clientele, you should say. Yeah, I see these women every day, for instance. but I won't go down that road. But I'm really curious to see what the face of, for instance, Atlanta public school system is going to look like come fall of 2009.
Well, they're already talking in Atlanta about closing schools and merging schools. That's been in the news every morning about, I don't know what schools, but, you know, they're closing certain schools that maybe aren't as populated and merging schools, so.
Well, and there was the discussion about merging the HBCUs or the HBCUs with other local colleges, but that probably will go nowhere to save money.
I don't think that's going
to
go
nowhere. That'll go nowhere this time. There's too many bigger fish to fry this time. And I think that was a trial balloon to see what sort of reaction.
Yeah,
the reaction was not good. So that was going to be sponsored by Seth Harp, and I think he's backed off of that because there's just so many things that we got to deal with right now. Like I said, we got a budget shortfall. Transportation is a huge issue right now, and those two things are going to dominate everything. And we're going to have the sort of smattering of crazy bills, Bobby Franklin, out there.
Not again.
You know, like we do every year, but all the oxygen in the room is just going to be sucked out by transportation and the budget.
Do you think anything is going to actually be accomplished with transportation this year? Because it sounds like the approaches are pretty divergent. There's the one philosophy that the metro region should be able to tax, you know, form its own tax district, and there's the other idea that the state should be doing everything.
So something's going to happen. We're going to have TSPLOS this year, which is basically a transportation sales tax, a 1% sales tax. The question is, what flavor are we going to get? The bill that died last year that came out of the Senate, I think, was a regional version. And the real conflict right now is whether you do it as a regional version or you do it a statewide version. And really, that comes down to how the money is controlled. And it's going to happen. It's going to be how they figure out the compromise between those two. And you got two different philosophies there. You have sort of the economy of scale of, if you gather all the money into a central pot, it's easier to do large things, versus a regional plan, where I actually heard the plan yesterday. It's actually to take all the money and then divide it amongst the 30 largest cities in the state based on population, which means Atlanta would get a lot and like Moultrie would get a little. And so it's going to get really down into the dollars and cents there, and figuring out, it's going to get down into the dollars and cents and the politics of figuring out what the best compromise between those two are. But we will have a T-SPLOS this year.
We have to, because there's been all kinds of talk about how our poor transportation is affecting the economy, and we're not getting, you know, new businesses in Metro Atlanta and in Georgia because of our poor transportation policies. So our future economy is going to be affected by our lack of transportation planning.
Well, I mean, I agree, although that's what we've been saying for how many years, and it's, it seems like nothing really gets
done. Well, it seems like Savannah has certainly experienced a little bit of a boomlet in terms of business. I saw several businesses were headed that way. I wonder if that's at the expense of Atlanta because of our traffic, that the Savannah area is really going to flourish perhaps at our expense here in Metro Atlanta.
What about MARTA? Because I'd heard that they're actually talking about, they've been really hard hit by the recent economic situation, and probably gas prices going back down. And they're talking about raising rates and cutting routes.
And no more bathrooms.
No more bathrooms, that's right.
Stinky MARTA.
They closed the bathrooms.
I don't know that I've been in a MARTA bathroom before. But
yeah, well, taking your own life in your own hands.
That was sort of the thing, is who uses the MARTA bathrooms?
MARTA is, boy, talk about hard times. They just can't get a break, PR-wise or money-wise, so I don't know what's going on.
And the problem is there's no money to give them now.
Yeah, I was going to say, is there any chance that the state's going to do anything at this point?
No. We didn't give MARTA money in good times. Yeah. Now we're not even in bad times. We're in terrible times, and MARTA's not going to get money. It's just not going to happen. And unless there's some sort of comprehensive transportation plan, which I don't think is going to, you know, something that large is going to come out of this session. We're dealing with bottom lines at this point, and we're not talking big idea land right now. You talk big idea land when times are good, not when times are bad.
Well, what about there's one issue, Jen, that you wanted to bring up, which was about a recent court ruling, right, and how this might affect
So, you know, last year Barry Fleming sort of hijacked one of these judiciary bills and attached non-unanimous death penalty verdicts to it. I think at the time that the bill passed the House, I think it was 10-2. It made its way over to the Senate, and of course Casey Cagle said, you know, we should have had hearings on this, and of course the Senate voted it down. So with the Brian Nichols decision coming out, and of course him getting life, I'm sure that this House and the Senate will probably revisit non-unanimous death penalty verdicts again. But, you know, Brian Nichols was 9-3, so even if that bill had passed last year, you know, it wouldn't have had any effect on Brian Nichols getting life.
Yeah, that bill's actually been submitted.
So is it a 9-3 or is it 10-2?
It's a 10-2. And chances of it passing are pretty slim.
Yeah.
It's one of those things where in the heat of the moment everybody says this is kind of a good idea, but upon reflection people in both parties go, this is not something we should be mucking around with right now.
Yes.
What about, and obviously we do have much bigger fish to fry than this at this point, but the topic that a lot of people that I know seem to be very passionate about is Sunday alcohol sales. And
where's the cater guy? we can make our annual bet.
I'm kind of doubtful myself, actually, anything's going to happen on this with everything else going on.
It's going to pass.
You think it is?
It's absolutely going to pass.
If they were going to have any year, it would be this year, because that's a huge, you know, influx of money right there.
Yeah, it's,
yeah,
it's,
you're right.
It's the revenue. It's the revenue stream. It's that they fought this battle so long. Eventually, you get to the point where you just give up on the battle. And there's a big indicator. Senator Balfour, who is the chair of, I think it's the Rules Committee in the Senate, actually signed on to it this year, and that's where it was killed last year.
Is Sonny Perdue willing to sign off on it?
Well, that's the question. He said he's going to veto, and the question is do they get enough votes in the House and Senate to make a veto untenable?
Because he was one of the reasons that they kind of weren't able to get it through last year because of his...
But his religious beliefs.
Yeah.
I would say.
Well, I think that might be part of it too, is the sort of the weakness in the GOP nationally. Perhaps they're recognizing that they can't kowtow to the religious right quite so much as they have in the past. Though
I bet they still can enjoy
it. I think they can still kind of enjoy yeah, that. But there might be some pressure.
We're always kind of the exception.
There might
to
be
the
some pressure on the Republican Party. You know, the yeah. National Party might put some pressure.
The, economy and the syntax looks good right now. So,
well, the other problem with this, you know, religious belief argument is that it's not forcing it upon anybody. You know, the citizens of each county are going to be able to decide whether or not they want it. So, you know, if his home county, you know, doesn't want it, then that's fine.
Yeah. And the that's a good point because and the Republicans, they got sort of gigged last time on opposing local control on several issues, and you can't get more local control than allowing counties to decide if they're going to sell alcohol on Sunday. And that's all this bill says.
Well, looking down the road a couple of years, I know I've been hearing a lot about people announcing that they're gonna be running for governor in, was it 2010 the governor race is? Yeah. Wow.
It's next year.
Next year.
Yeah, it's already started.
It started a long time ago.
I know.
Four people now in the Republican. Karen Handel, Casey Cagle,
John
Oxendine. I thought I heard of some other guy.
No, Ray McBerry doesn't count. there's three.
And and on the Democrat side, no one's announced yet.
Oh, Poitras is announced.
Poitras.
Okay. And also, there's a lot of talk about Roy Barnes.
Wait, but you didn't announce the person that everybody has been saying for the last year is going to run, right, Catherine?
That's right.
Here.
DuBose.
Oh, yeah, DuBose Porter.
Well, I think he's waiting to see whether Barnes is going to get in.
How old is Barnes now?
He's
not that old. I'm going to ask forgiveness from Catherine here. I think it's sort of indicative of the fact that we started this discussion and we didn't even mention DuBose. Not that he's done a lot. I'll say this. He hadn't actually come out and campaigned. I mean, it's not like he has a campaign and his name's out there. But, you know, the sort of, I won't say presumptive, but the big name in the Democratic Party 6 months ago hadn't made much of a splash so far, other than he did do the Democratic response to the State of the State the other day.
Well, yes, and he didn't run a candidate for Speaker.
Yeah.
I think that was a political move.
Oh, absolutely.
I think that was, you know, I'm here for the people, you know, I want to, you know, move on with the people's business.
There's been a lot of talk of unity on both houses this time. Although it was only 30 minutes later, he went up to the well and absolutely flayed him over the whole Hawks thing. But anyway,
there's pretty much no... I suppose there's a chance that if Roy Barnes decides he's going to run that DuBose won't, but it's my impression that DuBose is definitely running for governor. I mean, told me that, but...
Roy Barnes runs or not.
Yeah, I think there's...
What about for lieutenant governor? I think Labor Secretary Michael Thurman.
Michael Thurman.
They've been talking about him running for that post too. Has anyone on the Republican side announced for that?
Oh yeah, Eric Johnson and David Schaefer.
Oh, they're both going for that.
Oh yeah, and they're already slinging punches. They're
they're
at each other.
Yeah. Oh yeah. They're two of the hardest campaigners in the state. That race may be the one to watch, other than the governor's race.
Well, the race I'm watching is the Secretary of State's race. I don't know who's going to run, but...
Well, who's going to run?
I don't know.
Kemp on the Republican side.
Right. I don't know if any of the candidates from
Suddenly I'm speaking for Republicans and I'm looking at Catherine to speak for Democrats.
There was a rumor, I guess, on Tondi's the other day that Daryl Hicks would run again.
Yeah.
Which I think would be good. I like him. I think he would be a good Secretary of State.
Well, what about the scenario that Roy Barnes does run and he puts together a slate, which we haven't seen probably in our lifetimes.
You mean we only have one candidate for every office?
Yep.
Oh, wouldn't that be amazing?
Well, I'm just throwing it out there.
I would like that. I could support that. I could support that wholeheartedly. I am not really interested in a bloodbath in the primary this time. I think we can...
Maybe Jim Martin can run.
Well, speaking of Jims, the other name that has been sort of floating around other than Roy Barnes is Jim Marshall.
Yep, that's been...
I've read that.
Yeah, I've heard nothing out of the Marshall camp or out of Middle Georgia about him running. I mean, politically it makes a lot of sense, but
he garnered a lot of attention. Back in the fall.
He is a proven winner, and I'm not going to say the punchline.
He held on to his seat.
So
in
the
a very
slate
tough
would
district.
Include for the Democrats what Barnes Thurman.
Hicks,
Secretary of State, and then after that, nobody cares. Other than Tommy Irvin, which is going to be Republican.
Now, talk about old.
Terry Coleman's going to run.
Yeah, but Gary Black's going to beat him.
I don't know who we're going to have for Secretary of Education to run against.
Kathy with a K.
That's Kathy right. with a K.
Well, let's pull it back from state politics really quick and kind of narrow it down to local. Some stuff that's been going on locally in Atlanta. And Grayson, actually, you did a report recently on some of the reaction to the murders that or the murder that happened here a few weeks ago.
Yeah, I did it with sort of the you know, it was a report, it was a video report, pretty straightforward, typical news report. However, I did it with the focus being how are people coalescing around this issue. And just sort of examining social media involved, you know, can it make a difference under these circumstances? Apparently it can, because I wasn't the person responsible for creating an organization around that particular incident, but another blogger, Tessa Horled, was, and a guy named Kyle Keezer, who was a crime victim who we've seen in the media a lot around here lately. They were able to put together a very large group or coalition around the issue of crime in Atlanta, around the issue of the number of police or lack thereof that we have in the city, pretty much instantly, in a matter of days, they had 4,000 people join their Facebook group, Atlantans Together Against Crime and Cutbacks. Whether this, you know, what, that's a great thing in itself. You know, what the thing to watch now, of course, is where are they going to
how
take
they organize
this?
Those people to
yeah,
do things.
They've planned a rally a month. But one thing that I noticed, and this is really startling to me, just as somebody, you know, who likes to write about media issues, particularly in Atlanta, you know, sort of followed them and sort of wants to sort of connect the dots and see how they all join in or not. The Sunday after the murder, which was a Thursday, there was the vigil the next day on Thursday. The murder was Wednesday. There was a huge outcry in the media and by these groups. There was a vigil the next day. Then the group, you know, having coalesced around a website and a Facebook group and such, had a meeting on Sunday, just a basic meeting about what are we going to do about crime in this issue? How are we going to pressure City Hall to put more cops on the street? Yada, yada, yada. How are we going to feel safe in our neighborhoods again? Because no one feels safe in East Atlanta, Virginia Highlands. People are very frightened. And they don't want to work around at night. They're carrying guns. They're arming themselves. So anyway, they have a meeting, and it was Sunday, and they had over 100 people at a coffee shop. Well, that meeting about crime in Atlanta ended up as the lead story on all the 11 o'clock news broadcast that evening, which was a first, to see something coalesce in the blogosphere and become the lead story on all the local broadcasts that evening. It was a very, very remarkable media moment here in Atlanta, and I just hope that the momentum carries over and that the leaders realize, you know, what they're dealing with in terms of grassroots power and grassroots efforts, and that people are very, very upset. One thing, though, we've not seen in this whole issue is Chief Pennington.
Where is Chief Pennington?
I have no freaking idea. Anybody know where Chief Pennington is? I don't think they understand. That's the whole frustrating point. You've got this, these people are, they're frightened, they're coalescing, they want to talk about this issue, and we have absolutely no leadership. We've got a bunch of rogue statements from rogue cops, rogue firemen, rogue firemen, making this statement, making this, going off the leash, off this, off message, off topic. Absolutely no leadership.
Who was the chief of police under Bill Campbell? I'm trying to remember.
Was the woman?
Jackie Barrett? No, that was Sheriff.
No, there was a woman Barrett? Chief of police, but yeah. Pennington, and I can't. Her name just flew off the top of my head.
My point is that anytime anything major happened in this city, we saw the chief of police, who I cannot remember her name. Now, it was sort of comical because Bill Campbell was there also. But during
vying for that camera.
Yeah. There, a joke about puppet here to be made. But let's get beyond that. This whole series of incidents we've had over the past month, we have certainly seen Mayor Franklin. Where's Chief Pennington?
I can't remember
the last time I saw him on the news.
Well, I never thought of the New Orleans Police Department as being a particular success, so I was a little surprised when they decided to bring him.
Well, he must be back in New Orleans, because he has not been seen in this town in front of the cameras anywhere, any of these rallies, vigils. I don't know. Where is the dude?
Yeah, we've even heard from the union leader, who criticized Shirley Franklin about her comments about adding a couple hundred more, and criticized her.
She said, well, I'm going to, raise taxes. I'm going to get City Hall, go back to City Council, and get them to raise taxes again, and we'll get more police. So that ain't going to happen, because she already tried that. So,
except that she tried it and she got shut down by the City Council.
Yeah.
And then Mary Norwood comes out and criticizes the mayor for, not providing, not... having more police. It's like, okay, Mary, we know you're running for mayor. So.
Well, yeah. Now that brings us back to the mayoral race.
But Kasim Reed hadn't said anything yet.
That's true, and I have to say that I'm a little bit disappointed in him for not being more more visible on this.
I have seen Kasim in front of a camera within a few seconds. Yes,
okay.
I have, yeah. He was at one meeting, rally, I'm not sure, but I have heard one statement from Kasim expressing his concern, being mayoral, in other words, out there looking like a candidate, along with Norwood,
well,
of course. Here's
the bottom line in my mind, is everybody's lined up in a circular firing squad here. Mayor's blaming city council's blaming mayor, mayor's blaming police department.
A lot of blame going
Everybody's
on.
Blaming the lack of money, which is a fact, we just don't have any damn money. And the bottom line is, we have a police chief who nobody can even find. You know what? We may not have any money. We may not have enough cops. But by God, you can't fix any of that until you got somebody who's actually a leader that can come in and say, this is what we need to do in this department. And that goes straight back to Shirley Franklin. And you know what? I think she was a great mayor for 4 years. I think the second 4 years is going to be remembered as, at best, unfinished.
She's been kind of MIA on a lot of...
I'm sorry to say that, but I tend to agree with
you. I'm sorry. I had a chance to hear her speak at the press club, ask a question of her, and she just... To tell you the truth, she seemed to not sense the urgency in this particular issue. Chief Pennington, he certainly doesn't, because he hasn't been seen.
Nobody can find
but
him.
Mayor Franklin also, there's at our leadership levels, they are not getting this sense of urgency. It's not trickling up.
To be fair, there's a lot of crime in Atlanta all the time. And perhaps they don't sense the urgency because they see it happening all around the city, and the urgency has come around these two recent events that I'm not saying that those aren't they don't demand some urgency, but I think that there is crime all over the city all the time, and these two incidents have just sort of rallied people because of the victims, the victim and then the near victim. So I'm not excusing her, but I think it's a little bit it's a little bit difficult to say that this requires more urgency than all the other crime always has.
The people are demanding some attention to this, and they haven't done that before. And if you do not respond as a political leader to, you know, what's the hot button topic at the moment, then you leave the gap for people like Norwood and Reed to get in there and take it over for you. So it's, you know, becoming a huge political matter now.
Well, I think there's two things at play here to talk about that, what you said, Catherine, because I think you're right. In a certain perspective, you are correct. There's crime in the city every day, and most of it doesn't affect us, and we read about it or we hear about it on the 6 o'clock news, and we sort of go, oh, we live in Atlanta, there's crime. There's two things that makes what has happened in the past month difference. First is what I call the frog boil. You put a frog in boiling water, you slowly heat it up, it doesn't know it's dying until water's boiling. You look back at the brazen, middle of the day, armed robbery of Fellini's in Decatur about, what was it, 3 months ago? And that was the thing. We've slowly seen these incidents start to climb up. To be honest, on this side of town, and now it has reached the point where there are people that are going, whoa, wait a minute, there's crazy stuff going on. We should have been saying there was crazy stuff going on when people walked into Fellini's Decatur in the middle of the day brandishing handguns in the middle of lunch. But we didn't until this latest has happened. Second thing is these incidents have hit, I hate to use this term, but social networks. It has hit close to home to the people who have the power and the ability to spread the word quickly. And that has resulted in a groundswell like you have not seen before against crime in this city.
You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. I don't disagree with you. But this also brings up, your comments also bring up another problem that we have in the metro Atlanta area, is that crime that you're talking about at Fellini's in downtown Decatur happened in Decatur.
Yep.
And Shirley Franklin and Chief Pennington have no power in Decatur. And this is a problem when you have a city that crosses, a metro city like Atlanta, that crosses those county barriers, because it's, I mean, I don't know, but I bet it's pretty damn hard to get the DeKalb County Police, the Decatur Police, the Atlanta Police, the Fulton County Police, all to work together. I mean, I can imagine.
We do not look at things towards a regional solution.
Right.
We haven't done it on transportation for 50 damn years. And it's taken people actually getting killed for us to suddenly realize that we got to start looking at these things in a holistic perspective instead of what's going on in our neighborhood.
You know, Franklin, let me, in her defense, I will say this too. A journalist at the, when I heard her speak recently, you know, at her annual State of the City address or whatever she does every year, a journalist said, what could we do better as journalists in this city to cover our issues in Metro Atlanta? And she said, I really wish people would report the regional, would report things, not just these isolated incidents. I wish we would start seeing, as whether you're a journalist or you're a blogger or you're anybody involved in media or reporting back to the public, to start, and in legislature, this comes back to our politicians, to start seeing in regional. But, you know, but she said this on one hand, out of one corner of her mouth, she's asking for media to see things and put them in regional context. Yet they still, you know, only are concerned when it comes down to it. She'll go, oh, well, that was DeKalb or that was Decatur.
And I didn't mean to say that. I mean, I wasn't trying to push it off.
It's a hard balance because it is the same
because
place.
Because she said, well, y'all need to go out. The constituents, the public needs to see things in a big regional basis. Yet here's a perfect case of leadership not behaving regionally. So,
you know, I hate to say it, but if this is what it takes, then so be it. We have how many dozens of people on the Atlanta Regional Commission who spend God knows how many days sitting in conference rooms trying to figure out how to spend God knows how many millions of federal dollars on a transportation system that is completely and utterly stuck in place. If this doesn't say that we got to start looking at problems in this metro area regionally, then I don't know what does. So whether Mayor Franklin is the lead on that, or whether somebody else is the lead on that, it is time to start looking at Atlanta as more than the city limits.
Well, Atlanta Regional Commission is there to see things and present things,
and nobody pays a damn.
What do they do? Why do they exist then?
To distribute federal money, and they do it badly, but that's not the point. The point is that we've got this completely balkanized metro area of like all these different
fiefdoms.
Mm-hmm. Good word.
Fiefdoms. Or is
it
fiefdom?
And if it takes people dying to get people to wake up that we got to address these things across these fiefdoms, then that's
it's
what
it's taking 20-something-year-old kids, really, bloggers, it's just baffling to me that the leadership is not coming from the top. It's coming from very, very grassroots young people
this
time.
From the top anyway.
The one thing I'll say before we wrap up, I think we're maybe running a little bit long, but the one thing I want to say is that I agree with that, but I also think that like any change comes from the state, and it seems like what I've seen from the Republican, the various Republican terms that have been in office for the past several years have been actually pushing more towards the balkanization rather than consolidating everything. More small cities, Dunwoody, the cities in North Fulton, even talking about breaking North Fulton off.
And
that's the exact opposite.
And that's been Republican-led, you're right.
And also along with that is the whole idea of privatization, and they're all tied together. One of the things that I always laugh about is if you drive around in Atlanta, I just saw him today. I saw a cop pull up next to me today, and I was like, "Oh, what cop is that?" Oh, it was Georgia State University cop. And then there's like, I mean, over at Atlanta University Center, each college has their own cops.
Mm-hmm.
And then you've got the MARTA cops, and you've got, it's like, how are you supposed to have any kind of coordinated, not even crime, just policing, if you've got all these individual little, clumps of cops everywhere.
Well, that unfortunately also affects the criminal justice system. Officers getting on the stand. Well, I don't know, because that was the detective in another jurisdiction that handled that part of it.
Well, it's been a very interesting discussion. I think
gotta give my plug.
We'll go around. Okay. It's been a very interesting discussion. I think we've got some... probably have some more ahead of us before the legislature ends their session, but let's go around the table really quickly and give final thoughts. And Jen, we'll start with you.
Oh,
if
man,
you haven't.
No, my final thought is is how I wish Manuel's Tavern was warmer, and I hope to finally get over this cold and finally start the new year.
Watch Lawmakers, George Public Broadcasting every night, 7 o'clock replay, 5:30 in the morning. Of course, I don't know who gets up that early except for like farmers and
me.
Apparently, DVR. 7 o'clock every night on George Public Broadcasting, Lawmakers. It's a great show, and it's a great way to keep up with the legislature.
Oh, I'll do that. Atlanta Press Club is getting ready for their submissions for their annual Journalist of the Year award. That also includes you can submit your material in many categories. This year, though, it's a little bit different. They're really opening up the awards this year for Journalism Awards and Journalist of the Year to the blogosphere. There's an online category. Any article in news or features that has had its genesis online, meaning a blog post too, or something specifically for online purposes, is eligible in all categories now, either in news or feature. And there's also a new category that's been added for opinion. So any blogger that thinks that they wrote a just brilliant opinion piece, come and play with the big boys, such as the Neil Bortz's, which was, typically submitted to this category of opinion. But opinion's open for everything. But they want to welcome the blogosphere. They want to see the best of the blogosphere this year. And so go to atlpressclub.org. And you can check out the rules and regs for submitting your best of 08 as a blogger.
I just have to say happy Barack Obama.
I know.
Tuesday is the big day.
The inauguration.
We're all excited about it.
Yes, change is coming, whether you like it or not. I want to say thanks to Manuel's Tavern for allowing us to have this here. And thank you to Rusty and Amber, as always, for hosting this show on Georgia Podcast Network, and also for providing the equipment for recording it. And thank you for listening, and hope you listen to our next show.